Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. The Gaylord at Opry, what a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, five of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com. 111-110.
You're in.
Awesome. There you go.
Oh, dude, I see that red sign in the back. I'm already fucking awesome. I'm pumped.
That's not the original. As a matter of fact, I don't own the original. I didn't keep it. The original sign, President Bush signed it when I went and met him, and I had it framed and put all the campaign medals in it with President Bush's signature on it. And it hangs in the Wounded Ward at Walter Reed. I gave it to Walter Reed. So it hangs right in the middle. Wounded Warriors touch it for luck before going to surgery. And I feel like that's where it belongs. So I do auction off smaller replicas that are numbered a couple times a year. But the original hopefully will always live at Walter Reed where I feel like it belongs.
It's awesome, dude. Really. Probably one of the best things ever created to known to mankind was that sign that you wrote. Phenomenal.
Thank you.
As a matter of fact, that kind of leads into how I discovered you was I was literally driving in my car, having a very difficult moment. And I put in YouTube, literally I put in how to get through tough times. And yours, the first that came up and I saw you, I went, okay, just at this guy's fucking face.
So did you actually type that in, how to get through tough times? Cause exactly. That exact title for the TEDx talk. We put a lot of research into what to name that TEDx talk.
It's exactly what I put in, dude.
That is
so exactly awesome. What I was looking for.
It makes me happy.
Well, it's something I needed. I don't know if it was everything that has helped me along my journey in this tough year of mine. And I thought I was somebody who's bulletproof and completely resilient, and you could not get through to me emotionally into that level to really rock me until things inside my safe zone started to fall apart. And I do like at the end of it, I was like, oh my God, I got to fucking DM this guy.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, I'm glad you did. You hit me at an amazing time because right now we are blowing the fuck up. I just did the Sean Ryan show and it is breaking every record Sean has ever had. I mean, we have reels that have over 5 million views on TikTok right now. I mean, it's insane. So it's pretty cool. And yeah, man, I'm just trying to continue to get this message out there.
How'd you end up at Virginia Beach?
Home of the East Coast SEAL teams. Oh. So I spent my entire career here. Interesting. My parents divorced and bounced back and forth between the two of them. So I lived all over the place growing up and then joined the Navy. And I stayed in one. I had an address in one place my whole career. I was hardly ever here, but it was good for my family. So we stayed here.
My wife's uncle's actually a Virginia Beach fireman.
Oh, no kidding. Right on.
Yeah.
I've spoke for the Fire Academy a couple of times.
It's awesome, man. It's such good shit. I have so many good questions for you. And I think it's going to be a little different than what you're used to, because I think that people who know your story. I'm sure you've told it 7,465 times.
I will say podcasts follow the same format. So yeah, you end up, that's why the Sean Ryan one was so much fun and refreshing, because it was like, all right, awesome, man. We got time to get super deep and tell stories that I've never been able to tell before. So yeah, I welcome the thought pattern. So Dennis, I'm all about it, man. Do you guys try and keep it clean? Do you guys
curse here and there? I'm a real piece of shit, Jay.
I love it.
I actually have been putting a lot of thought into going forward. I've actually dialed it back quite a bit. And the reason is because I don't want to drop the ball, because it's everybody's ball to drop. And I don't want to do that. I have a lot of responsibility now. We have a lot, we probably have a good portion of the cops in the country now looking at us for guidance.
Nice.
Myself and the other instructors here. And, we're really the big brothers they should have had, the field trainers they should have had, the compassionate human beings they should have had. And maybe the words of hope at times of how to get through these difficult times in our country's history.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I mean, as a leader, I think you have to look at that and say, okay, do I just say fuck it and I can say whatever I want and I don't really care about this message. It's kind of like I have a lot of friends that right now we're fighting this bullshit attack on First Amendment rights on social media. And so many guys are being shut down because they're speaking their mind, which we should have the ability to do in a country, in this country we built. But at the same time, in my opinion, you have to be smart. These platforms, you know, that's great if you go over to Truth, but you're just preaching to everybody who agrees with you. That's not who we need to change. That's not who we need to educate. So I've been careful. And okay, how do I continue to get my message out? How do I state my opinions without being an asshole about it or being so blatant? Because man, I got friends that have been canceled right and left, man. They've had their accounts shut down. So I think it's just being smart and strategic. And what is your end state you're trying to accomplish?
I agree 1,000%. And sometimes us as leaders, we kind of know best. And we can't let the noise to the left and the right, which either way you're gonna scream, affect what our judgment calls are. So, and we're gonna go into some of those questions I have for you. But my first question for you, Jay, is tell me about the pig.
Winston the pig, man. Dude, so first off, we have to preface this story. My wife is the female Jack Hanna. Like there's only one animal my wife does not like, and that is a snake. Beyond a snake, my wife will bring in every roaming, crawling creature on the planet into our house. And we have had virtually every type of animal. So, of course, this passes down to my daughters. And my oldest daughter has always loved pigs. And at the age of 19 last year, ordered a teacup pig from Utah without telling us. And suddenly this pig shows up. Like literally I am on a trip and my wife says, okay, I got to tell you something. You're probably not going to be very happy about this. And I came home to find this piglet. And I was like, no, I was pretty angry for the first few days. And my older daughter is the most like me. She is, she's an amazing kid. And she finally managed to convince me to allow her to keep this pig, who became known as Winston the pig. Now, Winston has grown to almost, I think Winston's about 80 pounds now. But he lives in the house, which I still sometimes scratch my head at. But my wife, also helping me run social media, marketing, you know, the ongoing joke from the beginning is like, someday I'm going to eat Winston. And and that has now become this whole social media thing. And Winston has his own damn following damn near. I mean, I go to events and you know, I speak on high level leadership and resilience, and I meet people that are like, tell me about Winston. So I will say he's incredibly intelligent. My daughter has taught him all kinds of stuff. There are times we do videos and I crack up at. I mean, this video of him watching the Sean Ryan show, I was laughing my ass off at. So
that's awesome, dude. Yep. When I see the videos on your Instagram and I look at you as a father and say, it seems like you have a great relationship with your kids. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I do. And, you know, here's the thing about raising kids and running a company. Leadership is leadership regardless. And really the same principles apply. So when I talk to people about my three rules of leadership, they are lead yourself, lead others, and lead always. Same principles apply to how you raise your kids. So, you know, this old idea of do as I say, not as I do, really doesn't work. It's never really worked. But in this day and age where kids have access to so much information and where there's so few leaders and role models, guess what, man? It comes to you. You have to set the example for your kids. And I have tried to do that right from the very beginning. So I want to be friends with my kids, but at the end of the day, I'm dad. And I am a leader and I set the right and left limits and I will hold them accountable for those limits. And those are the things that we do. The flip side of that coin, no different in leadership within any team or organization. Your job is to raise your kids to be their own leaders. They have to get out in the world and be functioning citizens to be hopefully, you know, this amazing country we live in with freedom and opportunity to go out and seek out their own freedom and opportunity. Well, in order to do that, you've got to allow them to grow up and make their own decisions. So you give them the guidance, you give them the right and left limits, and then you let them go out there and you trust them. And sometimes they're going to totally screw up. And that's something we've also done with our kids. So I've been really blessed. My oldest daughter, who, like I said, is the most like me, the most precocious of my three kids, she's the one who gave us the biggest run for our money when she was about 14 and a half and kind of strayed. And that was a really hard time. And I had some friends who were like, hammer her ass, you know, just lock her in her room and throw away the key. But I also knew if I did that, I knew me, I would have been like, fuck you, I'm out. Like, I'm not going to deal with any of this. Instead, I had to kind of empower her and also allow her to figure these things out, that the path she was choosing was not a good one. And it took about a year and a half to go through. So I have a great relationship with my kids. The other thing, my wife and I are a united team. We agree on how we're going to lead. Our kids don't mom and pop because my wife and I are in agreement on how we do anything, maybe aside from pets. But yeah, that is where we're at. And I'm very fortunate to have three amazing kids.
The pets is the loophole they figured out. That's what it is. They know where they can fucking push.
They know mom will trump dad every time on pets.
They figured it out.
I've just given up on that. I'm just like, okay, whatever.
This is like when I bring my kids to like the power sports center. They know. They're like, yo, did you see this fucking go-kart? And I'm like, you know, I noticed it too. And like, what do you think? And I'm like, I think we should just get it. Right. And then I'll come home and they're like, my wife's like, you realize there's no more room for all this shit. And I'm like, no, we'll fit. There's some room in the shed.
Like, it was the kids. It wasn't me. The kids did it. I love it. That's awesome. Well, good on you, man. And you know, hey, life is experiences. You can't take the shit with you. So in the end, it's going to be the memories you have. So.
Yeah. I am very much constantly in presence and thought of my children. And I have something that I do for them that I try to really at the top of my chart instill in them. But before I give you my answer on that, what is the top most important core message you're trying to send to your children? If you could think of maybe just one big thing that you're trying to or did over the years implant in their brain of what was the most important thing?
We overcome. You're a Redman. We overcome. We figure it out. You know, you may get knocked down, but you're going to get back up and you're going to go. You know, we're not going to sit here and dwell. You know, we're not going to play the blame game. What happens, happens. So let's go. Get up.
I love it.
Forward.
I told my son this morning when I was leaving, I said, you know, I'm very proud. He's 8 and a half. I got little kids, 8, 6, 5, and almost 3. And I said, he started to really get it. And I said, you know, I'm proud of you. And he smiled. And I said, you know why I'm proud of you? And he said, why? I said, because of the way you act with other kids and how kind and thoughtful you are and how gentle you are with other kids and put them first. I go, now, I'm going to also say that you're a real piece of shit to your siblings, but that's okay because that's in this house. But outside of this house, the kindness that you show to these other children makes daddy happy.
That's awesome. Yeah. You know, and those are really powerful words. I did one of my Monday musters was on that. Those words of, I am proud of you, whether you're a boss, whether you're a dad, even spouse to a fellow, you know, spouse, man, those are powerful words. I think a lot of people take those words for granted.
It's like love. People think I have a problem with the word love, but I don't. I just consider it to be so valuable that I don't toss it around like it's a cheap fucking piece of cloth.
Yeah.
So when I use the word love, it's impactful.
Yeah.
That's just me.
I agree. I will say I say it more as I get older. I think this world needs a little more love, you know?
I guess I'm seeing the sense
of everybody on the street. There's enough evil and pain and violence and just nastiness. So I also wasn't really raised in a family where we said, I love you a lot. But now that I get older, man, I tell my kids all the time. I tell my close friends, dudes who that used to make me a little uncomfortable, tell another dude, hey, man, I love you. But now this life's short, man. You'd be gone in the blink of an eye, gone from your kids, gone from your spouse. You know, I mean, I just had a friend that passed away last weekend, young stud and freak accident. So yeah, man, take that time. Because I tell you what, if you have a moment to think about it, you know, me, when I came, you know, when I almost died, I had about 40 minutes in that gunfight to contemplate the fact that I was dying. And dude, you would give anything to tell people, the people you really care about, how much you love them one last time.
Jay, we typically have a lot of police officers who are significantly injured in the line of duty and almost to the point of death. And I've got a funny feeling that, and I didn't say this earlier, I wrote you know, thank you so much. When I say these things, I mean them because I try to really put myself in what that must have been like and try to come a fraction close in my mind to what you went through. And I'm able to have a little context because of all the cops that I interview and know that have been significantly maimed and injured as well. You know, the magnitude, I don't think there's a lot of people who really, really, when they say thank you for your service, I know they mean it at the surface, but to really, really mean it, to really put some thought into what you experienced and what you did and why you did it and why you were there. Well, we sat comfortably and a man like you stepped up to the fucking plate. I don't know if thank you is enough of a service. So I just want to say thank you now on the surface and just know that it goes way deeper than that. Just thank you.
Thank you.
When did you realize you were very intelligent? When did that happen? Weird question, right?
I don't know if that's happened. I will say, I don't know if I'm really intelligent. I mean, that's probably a stretch. I will say, I think I've always been a deep thinker. And with deep thinking at times comes problems. I give it to some people who aren't deep thinkers. They take things on face value and they act. That also can get you in trouble, but you know, sometimes there's power in that. I often joke that I am a slow fucking learner. Oftentimes because A, I think too much about things, and B, I sometimes think I know better, or C, this is where I'm really famous from in my own path, is even though other people have done it before and it may not have worked for them, I'm like, oh, I can fucking make this work. And so a friend of mine once said, you know, man, Jay, there's the easy way of doing things. There's the hard way of doing things. And then there's Jay Redmond's way of doing things, you know, which is, you know, I'll set myself on fire and, you know, drink gasoline as I try to do this. As I get older, I'm trying to get smarter. I try now to watch what others do. I try to reach out. And if someone tells me that can't be done, I try to figure out why, instead of just running blindly in like I used to and being like, fuck you, I'll make this happen. So yeah, intelligent, I don't know, man. I think there's intelligence, and then there's extremely highly functioning common sense, which I think is a whole nother level of intelligence, if you will. And it's individuals who are able to look at the world and take really complicated things and make them simple. And then adapt to those things very quickly. Like, I don't have a great business mind. I have figured out business slowly and oftentimes painfully. Whereas I have friends who are geniuses in business. They can look at a complicated problem and immediately have a solution and figure out how to monetize it and make tons of money. So yeah, there you go. There's a very long answer to, I'm a deep thinker.
And that's what really probably attracts most people to you, is the deep thought that you go into. And sometimes, you know, I know that I get interviewed at times and I'm like, man, I hope that when the question is asked, I have a good answer, because I really want it to be intelligent. And I'm a deep thinker as well, probably to my detriment a little bit. But you said slowly and painfully is typically how you learn, and namely in business. That's the only way you learn in business. So don't think it's just you. I got my fucking teeth kicked in the past 7 months, and nothing, some stuff outside for, some side inside for, some lessons learned. We just talked about this earlier. There was an episode of Shark Tank where Barbara Corcoran was trying to sell herself to one of the entrepreneurs that was pitching the product. And she said, you should work with me. I've made every mistake in the book. She's like, there's not a thing that I've done right yet. That's why I'm good for you.
Nice.
It's just so, it's such a
that can be my line. Sales point too.
Yeah, but it's when you understand what she's saying as a business owner, like, we make fucking mistakes all day long, but we don't sit there and count those mistakes.
Well, that is the difference. Yeah. And actually, I am a huge fan of your mistakes make you into who you are. I mean, look at me. I am the product of a series of mistakes and failures and catastrophic events and ambushes. And that really is what makes an overcome mindset. I tell people, look, an overcome mindset can't be created in easy times. You can't just flip a switch and suddenly turn on an overcome mindset. You've got to fuck up, and you've got to have made mistakes, and you got to have tragedy have occurred in your life. That's what makes an overcome mindset. So if you always seek out the easy way in every aspect of your life, I got bad news. Someday when the first real life ambush hits, you will be unprepared.
Sometimes even if you're prepared, you're unprepared.
Well, true. And then you continue, but I'm living proof that we build upon them. You stack life ambushes, as I describe them, one on top of another, and your ability to successfully navigate out of it builds. So oftentimes people will say to me, frequently people automatically think that my battlefield injuries were the hardest thing I've ever been through. And it's not true. Hardest thing I've ever been through was failing as a leader and being told we want to kick you out of the SEAL teams. Rock bottom, put a gun in my mouth, failure point. Like literally, I almost took my life. And I did not think I could recover from that on a number of levels. I mean, the SEAL teams, no different from, you know, law enforcement, fire, any career where there is we have a lot of egos, you know, it's a lot of alphas. And you know, man, when you screw up, we will eat our own. It's like blood in the water in a feeding frenzy. And we don't tolerate that failure very well. And most individuals that have been in that situation leave. And I almost did. I almost left because I convinced myself that little fucking lion demon inside your head that says, you'll never come back from this. No one will ever follow you again. You'll never recover your career. You'll never rebuild your business. You know, you were in a divorce. You'll never love again. No one will ever love you because you're a fucking broken piece of shit. All those lies in your head, I almost bought into them. You know, and everybody else will buy into them also. But the prior failures, and in this case for me, it was climbing out of that leadership failure hole, that little over two-year climb leading up to me being grievously or, you know, seriously injured on the battlefield. I'll be honest, when I laid in that hospital bed, it only took about a week before I said, hey, bro, like, you just walked the hardest path you've ever been through and you created a formula. Guess what? That formula applies here too. You know, I don't care if you're laying in a hospital bed or you're leading a business or you're leading, you know, a fire department or a police department. Guess what? The formula of leadership is the same. And I told myself, so quit your fucking whining. Let's go. You know, the formula, we can do this. And I'll be honest, it made it easier for me. I was able to say, hey, you went through this. So that's why I tell people that going through major life ambushes and crisis and tragedy and failures and mistakes sucks. It's miserable. But if there's any positive thing you can look for in it, it's a little bit, you know, Brent Gleason has his book, Embrace the Suck. And I would say embrace the suck because your ability to get to the other side makes you stronger for future ones. And it'll set you up for success for the future ones that are coming. And they are coming. They're always coming.
What do you say to somebody who maybe in their mind think they're at the rock bottom and almost feel like they don't know what to do now?
One, it's never too late. And two, it starts with you. You know, so this kind of gets into the methodology I teach when we have a crisis moment or a life ambush. And life ambushes come in three different categories, in my opinion. We have the minor life or the micro life ambush I talk about in my book, Overcome. This is the ambush of the mind. All of us encounter these. Some of us encounter them every day, depending on your level of positivity or negativity that you live in. But it's that little voice that tells you, you know, you're not good enough. And oftentimes it's the scars we carry from younger or prior ambushes that form us. So if you were an abused kid, physically, mentally, emotionally, you'll probably carry a lot of baggage and a lot of negative self-talk. These micro ambushes are going to happen at a regular time. If you were an abusive relationship, women who came up in an abusive relationship, physically, mentally, or emotionally abused, oftentimes they are telling themselves all these things. If you were sexually abused, whatever it is, it's easy to get inside your own head and lie to yourself. So race, creed, gender, I don't care what it is. We all have a tendency to get stuck in these moments. Then comes the schedule disruptions, when something big comes along that knocks you off your schedule in a negative way. And then, of course, comes the major life ambushes. These are the you know, breakups, divorces, business failures, injury or accident to you or someone you love, sexual trauma to you or someone you love, or the loss of someone you love. And probably the biggest ones I've seen is the loss of a child. So number one, anytime these things happen, you are on the X. And, you know, I think in law enforcement, you guys use that same term. The X is the point of attack. It's the point of crisis. It's can be an ambush point. I use it to describe any adverse event in your life, whether it's, you know, a physical attack, a mental attack, an emotional attack, could be a lawsuit, could be, you know, whatever. You're on the X. And most people, when they're on the X, get totally overwhelmed by being on the X. It was when I was kind of coming out of my battlefield injuries that I began to see the similarities between a battle ambush and the bullets and bombs of battle, and a life ambush and being hit by the bullets and bombs of life. We react the same way. You know, you're overwhelmed, you're hunkering down, you're wishing it would go away. But you got to push through that and start focusing on what actions can I take to overcome this situation. That really is the overcome mindset. And that is the idea of getting off the X. So the two principles, coming back to your original question, is number one, it's never too late. All those lies that you have told yourself, and oftentimes other people tell you, oh yeah, you'll never recover from this. You know, oh, your business is too big of a failure point, or, hey man, you should go do something else because there's no way you'll ever come back from this. And sometimes there's truth in that and sometimes there's not. But what I'll tell people is never too late to drive forward and figure out the new path. And number two, you have to get off the X. The X is like quicksand. The longer you sit in it, the more it pulls you down and the harder it is to get up and go. And if you can, man, if you can instantly, or at least as quickly as possible, time is relative, I will say that. If you lose a child, I don't expect you the next day to jump up and be like, I got to get off this X. But at least if you know, I can't lay here on this X forever, I owe it to the memory of my kid. I owe it to other families out there that may someday lose a child to get up off this X and figure out how to make a difference for my family. Because guess what? You're still a leader. If you lost a child, you have a grieving spouse. You may have kids who are also grieving for that lost child. And guess what? You are the leader. You are the one that has to get off that X and lead others off that X. And that's why it's never too late. I don't care where you're at. I don't care how long it's been. Fucking get off that X and drive forward and lead. And you will see the difference it makes in your life.
Well, that was a pretty good answer.
Thank you. And I'll succinctly just, the other thing a lot of people get hung up on is they waste a lot of time on trying to fix something that's totally broken or that they want something back. Perhaps relationships are a big one. I coach oftentimes where I have individuals who sustain a divorce, and oftentimes it's a guy who cheats on his wife and then he feels super sorry and he wants to repair that relationship. And I'm like, you know what, man? You may be able to do it, but most of the time it doesn't happen. So you waste a lot of time looking back at the past, trying to fix something that most likely is not fixable. So I'd say let's put a little bit of effort into it, but sometimes we break things to the point they can't be fixed. And that's where we need to look at how do we drive forward and create the end moment. Here's your new beginning. Whether you like it or not, this is the new beginning. So sometimes I try to explain that to people because they literally sit on that X forever trying to fix something that unfortunately cannot be fixed. You have to chart the new path.
I will also sprinkle in that if you feel like you need help, there is help that exists. But again, there's going to have to be some initiative for you to pick yourself up and go find some of these things, because typically people aren't bringing them to you. There's got to be some initiative. That's why it's the foot after the one foot in front of the other. Maybe it's to go to see a therapist to get taking that initial step. I told somebody the other day, I go, I think everybody should go to therapy. I think it's great. I think that everybody should go. And I don't think, you find a good therapist. I don't see a negative downside to it. I'm sure everybody's got the hour a week to make yourself feel better. That's just me. That's how I feel about it.
Well, and you know what's funny is cops, firefighters, and military are the worst. We all work in a profession where we depend heavily on a partner, on a fire truck full of other guys, other individuals you're going into a burning house with. In the military, we have a fire team, a squad, a platoon, a company of individuals, you know. Yet when we struggle with some sort of major life ambush or problem, especially when it becomes mental or emotional, we tell ourselves, well, I got to figure this out on my own and I don't want to burden other people with this problem. And I just don't get that. I'm like, dude, we've spent our whole life depending on these other guys or gals to get shit done, to crush things. And now suddenly when you have your own internal problem, you're like, no, I have to do it on my own. I mean, it kind of flies in the face of everything we've been trained to do. So I really encourage you to apply that same principle to every aspect of your life. I'm a pretty high functioning, you know, Navy SEAL who got all fucked up, and I struggled mentally after it for a while. And finally my wife was like, this is not working. So I had to go get help. And I encourage anybody out there to do the same. You know, if you think you're too tough for help, put your ego in check, man. You know,
I think there's also some anxiety with actually taking that first step. But it's a big step, and I don't think it's any different than zip lining and you're scared, or jumping out of a plane and you're scared. I have a thing, a saying that I would fucking hope that I can copyright this, because it's one of those moments where I was like, this is profound. I have a thing that says in my mind, and I'm not the toughest guy in the world by any stretch of the imagination. Although I have fear, I am not afraid. You know, I really try to encompass that a lot and try to really understand what is causing the anxiety of fear and what's the reality in that fear. And I've had a lot of soul searching lately to really unpack that.
That's what courage is. I mean, courage is your ability to act despite fear. When people say, oh, that's a courageous person, it doesn't mean that they, you know, Adam Brown's book is called Fearless, and Adam was an amazing human being. But I guarantee in those final moments, you know, or some of the more dangerous moments of your life, I don't care who you are, there is a moment where you're like, holy shit, you know, I could die, or, you know, what I'm getting ready to do, you know, could have catastrophic events or catastrophic consequences. So, but we still do it because we're courageous and we know the impact it's going to have. Like, hey, there is a reason I'm doing this. I am going to protect someone. I'm going to protect someone on the streets. I'm executing a mission at this high level that may have, you know, strategic or operational impact. I'm running into a burning building to save someone, or maybe I'm just taking a stance that may not be the popular stance. And man, I could get vilified for this, but I believe in it and I have conviction. So there's courage in that too. So
maybe you could just give, and I'm not trying to downplay the seriousness of the situation you went through. In the beginning, I said that I wanted to make this more about the Jason Redman now versus the Jason Redman then, and what led to that more. Maybe if people aren't familiar with what your story is, and I don't, that actually annoys me that you're not as, at the moment, as famous as I think you should be. Maybe just a quick explanation of who you were, what you did. And I don't want to do what everybody else does to you. So, but maybe just to give paint some context.
All right, I'll answer that one second. I will also say that oftentimes I hear a lot of people say, well, I've done this and I've done that, so I should be at the same level as this person over here. And I take the world as it is, not as I wish it would be. And I just say, you know what? It's not my time yet. And instead, I got to keep grinding and doing what I do and what I believe in and what I feel like my new mission is. So, and I would encourage everybody to follow that path. If you start getting bitter and saying, well, I should be here, that's driven by ego. The reality is it may not be your time yet, man. So you just got to keep grinding. If you believe in your mission, are you doing it for you? And because you believe in you believe in your mission? So anyways, that's kind of my thought on that. So,
well, I'll be pessimistic for you. Don't worry.
Hey, that's all right. I'm a glass half full guy. And I wasn't always, man. I believe in the power of positivity as I've gotten older and gone through all the different shit that I've been through. So, and there's power in that. I talk about that in emotional leadership, the power of positivity as a leader, despite whatever overwhelming situation you're up against. So go back. Who was Jason Redmond? Jason Redmond was an asshole when he was younger. And I was an unlikely kid to become a Navy SEAL, but they just, I had something inside me, a chip on my shoulder that said, I don't care if you tell me I can't do it. I'm going to drive forward and do it. I'm going to figure out a way to do it. And I was physically capable enough and probably mentally capable enough to grow and accomplish and excel at a pretty young age. But the problem with, I don't see it as often in young women, but I see it a lot in young men. When we excel to a high point very early in our careers, you see it a shit ton in professional athletes, college athletes, entrepreneurs who rocket ship. You know, I just finished watching this super pumped about the start of Uber. Go watch that. What a fucking fascinating show about a guy who was literally probably an entrepreneurial genius, but his ego ended up bringing down his company almost. And I walked the same path. As I continued to do well and grow in leadership, my ego grew and grew and grew. And I just, you know, poor people skills, you know, younger, a little bit of a bull in a china shop. And, you know, all of that led to my fall. You know, I went from an enlisted SEAL to an officer and came back as a young officer thinking I was God's gift to leadership. And I wasn't, and made a lot of mistakes, was not following the leadership path that I walk now. You know, lead yourself, lead others, lead always. I was only following number two, lead others. But I wanted to lead others by, hey, I'm the leader, so you should follow me. So if I tell you what to do, you should do it. But don't try and base that off how I'm leading or the things that I'm doing. Or, you know, hey, if I'm out partying like Tommy Lee at night, you know, that's my business. That's not your business. Don't fucking look at that. But so I had failed at a bunch of points as a leader and had some serious growing up to do. So, you know, that's really what, you know, this book is all about. You know, a lot of people who have never read this book, this book's a book about failure. It's about a young SEAL who catastrophically failed and almost got himself kicked out, but then picked himself up and said, okay, I've got to reinvent myself. And I did. And I reinvented myself. And then at the end of the reinvention journey, the redemption, I got all shot up. And that kind of brought that phase to a close, but it started a new journey. So There you go. Jason Redmond in a nutshell.
Comes with age, man. And you know what? I'm guessing that you probably had nobody to guide you about humility as a kid, just like me. I just didn't. I grew up in a socioeconomic environment of, I think about it all the time, man, like the shit that we used to do and what was applauded, what was okayed as even as growing up where I grew up. You know, I feel bad for the circumstances of that. That's continually just recycled. Even the humor at the police department or what was funny, what wasn't, what was the stories that were told, what wasn't. And I'm not saying it was deplorable. It wasn't setting anybody up to have humility.
Right.
And humility, I make these fucking signs and hold them up for likes on Instagram. One of the ones that did really well was humility is a rare trait in law enforcement, but a very powerful one.
I agree.
I met Gary Vaynerchuk years and years ago. The guy changed my life, obviously. But when I met him for the first time, probably the biggest thing that I took away from that gentleman when I met him in person was he made me feel like he was no different than me when I met him. I actually watched him almost act as a waiter for people in this room that we're at, helping people like some lady's glasses broke. He's like, I'll get you new ones. Stay right here. And I'm like, this is exactly as this thing grows, what I need to just remind myself of how he made me feel. You know, so when you speak about it, I just like you do a lot of self-reflection and say to myself, why was I like this? You know, and I'm glad that I'm more like this now because I had somebody who showed me how to be better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that you are taking who you've been, what you've been through, and really showing a lot of humility by sharing that with people. That's a cool thing, man.
Thank you. And definitely there were leaders. You're exactly right. I mean, the greatest leader I ever worked for, I write about him in my book, Not His Real Name. He's probably the most humble guy. I'm probably, in my opinion, one of the greatest leaders I ever worked for, ever witnessed. I kind of pray someday when he passes away, his kids will allow me to tell his full story with his name. But he was by far the greatest mentor, and he was the most humble leader I ever saw.
Leadership can be learned, and people don't realize that. It can 100%. Be learned if you want to learn it.
I actually teach. My methodology for leadership is called Learn to Lead, and it's an acronym. Anyone can learn to lead. It's never too late to learn to lead.
You left out a little bit of part that you were in an insane firefight. And I'm not going to go to, you know, you don't have to go too much details of that because I don't want to take up your whole day. I don't even want to do the service by trying to quote some of the stuff you said, but maybe you can give a little context of what kind of injuries you sustained and what your recovery period was like. And that's going to lead me into my next question, which is going to be a good one. You're going to like it.
It was a week before going home and went after the number one leader for Al-Qaeda in the Anbar province. It was a very, very intense firefight. It was basically six of us, really five, because our interpreter did not have a gun. So five of us against, we estimate to be a 12 to 15 man enemy force with two PKM machine guns. If you want to hear all the details, I would recommend you watch the Sean Ryan show with DJ Shipley, my teammate, who went on to be a very, very talented and experienced SEAL Team 6 operator, who said in that podcast that our gunfight was the most intense he ever experienced in his entire career. And then if you watch mine, we go deep into the weeds on everything that happened in that gunfight. But from that gunfight, I was shot eight times that we're aware of. So between my body armor and body, I took two rounds in the, in the left elbow. So I took a round in the bicep and I took a round on the inside of my forearm, which blew out and destroyed my elbow. I thought in the gunfight, my arm had been shot off, rounds off my body armor, rounds off my right side plate, rounds off my helmet, rounds off. I had my left night vision tube shot off, rounds off my weapon. And then I turned to try and move back to where the guys were behind me. And I caught a round in the face that traveled through my face, exited the right side of my nose, took off my nose, most of my nose, blew out my right cheekbone, broke it and kicked it out to the right, vaporized my orbital floor. I don't know if you can see this in the light.
Wow.
That is a 3D acrylic model of my skull. So you can see the path of the bullet. You can see that it vaporized the orbital floor. The eye fell into this newfound hole and obviously did a lot of damage. So to make a long story short, I owe my life to my team leader who ran forward and got me, pulled me back, got a tourniquet on my mangled arm. The guys helped pack my face, and then we ended up calling a fire mission from the AC-130 directly on our position, which miraculously we survived.
Wow.
So started a whole new journey, 40 surgeries over 4 years, very difficult, a lot of setbacks, a tough journey to get put back together. But I also had a lot of amazing opportunities. The guy that rebuilt my face is probably one of the best oromaxillofacial plastic surgeons in the entire world. And a civilian doctor, not a military doctor. He was out of Johns Hopkins and Baltimore Shock Trauma. And I through a series of kind of unique circumstances and a little bit of my own driving my care, ended up falling into his hands, and he did an amazing job. So yeah, long journey, but a journey that also, once again, taught me a lot about myself, a lot about who I am, and really continue to build this idea of self-leadership and the overcome mindset.
Do you remember the moment when you were in that hospital bed in Bethesda, Maryland, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What do you remember the moment when you made a decision on how you were going to live the rest of your life, laying there mangled? I can't even begin to imagine. But do you remember the moment when you made that decision that you were going to look at it a different way and take different steps?
Yeah. And I don't want to say it was this instantaneous moment. I'd say there were kind of three decision points that occurred, and it happened over about a week. the first decision point was I was really struggling. And like many of us do, when something catastrophic happens, especially if you're a leader, you start second guessing yourself. Oh, man, I should have made this choice and not this choice. I should have gone right instead of left. I should have done this. I should have done that. And I was really laying in that hospital bed, kicking myself. And finally, I just stopped. I said, bro, like, you can't go back and change the past. Like, I asked myself, did you do things how you were trained to do it? And the answer was yes. And I said, all right, then all you can do is drive forward. So stop kicking yourself. And now we got to drive forward. The second point was probably trying to figure out the path forward. What did that look like? And I knew it was going to be a long path. I mean, the doctor had told me it was going to be years to put me back together. And oftentimes when you're in a really bad situation, whether it's a divorce, whether it's cancer, whether you lose someone, other people want to place you into what I call the victim box. Like we're living, there's a new pandemic in America. I want to let all of you know, I call it the victim mindset. We're all trying to, or so many out there are trying to out-victim each other. And I don't know why as humans, we have a tendency to place people into the victim box when they go through something like, oh, that's so terrible that that happened to you. So, you know, you'll probably never be the same because of this, you know, that's bullshit. Don't do that to people and don't do it to yourself. And that kind of happened. I was in the hospital and I was kind of struggling to where I go forward from here. And I had some individuals that had come into the room and they started talking about what a shame, what a pity, you know, these young men and women, they're so broken and battered and they'll just never be the same. And when they left, I was laying there kind of, and, you know, like I said, it'd been about a week since I made the decision, hey, you can't live in the past. You've got to drive forward. But I didn't know what that path looked like. And I'll be honest, you know, you talked about it with any catastrophic event, there's a period of mourning. So there was a period of mourning. I was like, man, is my special operations career over? Am I going to be, I did feel like I was going to be a monster forever with the grievous facial injuries I had. And now I got these people that are like, oh, he'll never be the same. He'll forever be a victim. I joke in speeches now that, you know, am I going to be Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump? You know, the hookers and booze, Lieutenant Dan, not the you've got new legs, Lieutenant Dan, you know? And it was in that moment that was when the switch kind of got thrown. And I was like, no, that's not me. Like, you know what you need to do. Like, you got to get up and lead. Like, you have to get up and set the example. You need to be the one that's lifting everybody up around you, because that's what leaders do. That's what leaders do in hard times. And I was like, okay, that will not be me. And from this point forward, I told my wife, I said, I will no longer feel sorry for myself. And I refuse to allow anybody else to come into this room and feel sorry for me. And that is what led to that sign on the door, which really became the launch point, if you will. And it became my mission statement. That's a big thing I talk to for a lot of people. You know, when you truly set something in stone and writing and say, this is who I am and this is what I stand for. And especially when you write it down, dude, it becomes your anchor. It becomes your light in the darkness. I don't care what, because don't, you know, I'm not telling you that over 4 years, I was Johnny, always like, I don't care what setback I've had. I mean, dude, there were times I fucking cried my eyes out waking up after a setback from a surgery, or I was in so much pain I couldn't see straight. But I would look at that sign and I'd say, dude, that's who you fucking are. Get up. Let's go. You got to lead your kids. You got to lead your wife. There are other wounded warriors looking to you. You're a SEAL. There are other SEALs that are looking at you. Let's get up and go. And that sign says that's who you are.
Sounds like having a purpose is important.
Yeah. Your purpose is synonymous with mission.
How do you see your situation where you were significantly injured, essentially gravely injured, today versus seeing it before? I try to tell people, because, you know, I know a lot of people, and when you know a lot of people, you're going to see people in some of the roughest situations. I'm not trying to compare your situation to anybody else's, very, very different. But I try to remind people when they're in this shit, like, hey, man, everything that's been fucked up in my life has been the best thing that ever happened to me. You've got to keep the faith that that's true. And it may not show up in a day or a week or a month, But in some due time, you're going to look back and say, I thought it was the worst moment of my life, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
For most of us, yeah. And I will say that I every bad thing that's happened to me was a great thing. I would not go back and change anything in my life. I don't know, maybe sometimes when I was an asshole to people that I could probably undo that. But the hard things I went through made me better. But here's what you have to realize, you know, when you talk about being gravely injured and as you build yourself back, you're never going to be the same. And that's this was the biggest struggle I had as I was rebuilding myself, especially physically. I wanted to be the Jason Redman, pre-injury Jason Redman. I wanted to have all the strength and all the abilities that I had prior to that injury. And when that was not happening or it wasn't happening fast enough, then I was depressed and I would want to not push myself as hard because I kept buying into this idea of, well, I can't be the same guy I used to be. And the reality is that was absolutely true. But I have a whole chapter in my second book, Overcome, about this. When you build yourself back, especially coming back from a physical, you know, a physical accident, injury, or illness, you will not be the same. So I describe it as kind of like if you take a ruler and suddenly you take a 12-inch ruler and I was to chop a piece out of it and now glue it back together, it's going to be shorter. It's going to be marginally shorter or even more shorter, depending on the level of damage that occurred to it. So guess what? You're no longer this 12-inch ruler. You know, you're 11 inches or whatever it is. But you have to figure out how to maximize your new 100%. And that kind of became my that took a while to wrap my head around and say, okay, I may never be the Jason Redman pre-injury, but who is the motherfucking ass-kicking 100% Jason Redman post-injury? And that Jason Redman showed up at that swim in New York a couple of weeks ago and destroyed that swim. You know, this dude who's got half an arm crushed that swim, did 300 push-ups and 66 pull-ups and a 3-mile run with my teammates and brothers and so many Patriots in honor of the guys we lost on Extortion 17. That's the new 100% Jason Redman. And everybody has that within them. I don't care if you've lost limbs. I don't care if you've lost loved ones. I don't care if you lost your job. There is a new 100% version of you. And as soon as you accept that and figure out where it is and start going after it, it is amazing what you can accomplish.
We have a group called the Street Cop Survivors Club. And essentially at our first conference, our first national conference was in October of 21. We had honored 30 plus police officers who were significantly injured in the line of duty. Some of them really, really crazy stories. And I was overhearing the same thing from them, that they felt like they had nobody. They could not relate to things. So I said to these guys, I said, listen, this may be a crazy idea, but I think that we should create a Facebook group like the one we have for our cops already, but for you guys. And we have, as of yesterday, 100 or a couple days ago, 108 members. After creating that club, these men and women have now found so much comfort in meeting people like them. And as you talk those last moments, I can't wait to clip this and share that with them, because I think that's exactly what a lot of them need to hear. And I have no fucking business. I told them this. I said, guys, I will help you from the business end of things. If you have questions, I have no business being in this group with you other than to help you do what you guys have to do. I told them at the time, I don't even belong in this fucking room. I'm not worthy of it, but I'm here to help. I just think about that gift that you just gave these people that I know and to the rest of the world.
Well, and that's my, I've been trying to decide I've been playing with coaching, and I have a coaching group, the Overcome Army, which is a lower level group coaching for people who want to become the best version of themselves. But what I'm really this year, I'm revamping for my high level executive coaching. I was thinking about, what is my superpower? I help individual climb out of that hole of failure, adversity, crisis, mistakes. You know, if you fucked up and slept with your secretary and screwed up your business and you're totally ashamed and you're getting divorced, guess what? I can help you overcome that, because I've walked that path of digging myself out of a hole. And so you talk about that group. it's those of us who have the scars, man, physical, mental, emotional, or financial. And you think you could never overcome those scars? Let me tell you something. Those scars can become your superpower. You may never be the same, but you will figure out your new 100% and be better from it. And that's, I'm living proof of it.
I guess I have one last question because I don't want to take up more of your time. And then I want to give you a nice thank you at the end. So don't race off just yet because I want to tell you how much I appreciate this. But we kind of separate ourselves from the way we do our courses based on how our PowerPoints feel. When I was watching your TED talk, I took notice of the fact that you had a pretty fucking good PowerPoint. Who made that PowerPoint?
I did.
And did you have to like learn it on Google and YouTube how to do that shit?
No, because I'm a nerd officer who had to do a lot of PowerPoint, you know. So I, once again, you know, people, here's a great example of, you know, embrace the things. And this is one of the, you know, learn to lead. My last rule of learn to lead, the N stands for there are no shortcuts. You know, leadership is learned through experience, and it's doing the things you don't want to do. Oftentimes you learn more from the things you don't want to do. So as an officer, as a young SEAL officer and a naval officer, I had to do a lot of the administrative stuff. I wanted to be, I wanted to be that guy only kicking down doors and shooting and doing all those things, but I had to learn these other things. So yeah, I am a PowerPoint ninja. And if I had not embraced those things and learned those things, I would not be at the level I'm at today. And as a speaker, your ability to have great graphics and in your messaging, and that's grown also. If you go back to the beginning, I wasn't as tight. But once again, experience teaches and you get better and better.
I'll throw one more in here because I wanted to ask this. How did you decide what you were going to talk about on TED, and what did you think the impact was going to be? Because I'm going to tell you this, brother, I if I can recall correctly, I had a lot going on. I think it really got me emotional, and it's exactly what I needed. So if that was the intention, at least you can know that one person in this world was affected by it. So I got a funny suspicion there was a lot more people with 108,000 views on it.
And man, I'm really thankful to hear it's 108,000 now. One, it was really hard to decide what was the core message I was going to deliver because you had 18 minutes. That's a really tight timeline to deliver a very powerful message and to do it in a really powerful way that hooks people that say they want to come back. So I have a good friend who's a business guy, and I bounced ideas off him and some other friends and practiced. And settled on that format and flow. And I wanted it to be able to connect to anyone. That was one of the goals also. I didn't want to be this Navy SEAL. And it's one of my goals as a public speaker also. I don't want to be this Navy SEAL that you show up and you're like, oh, this Navy SEAL told this great story, but I don't relate to him. I want to be, you know, oh, that guy happened to be a Navy SEAL, but holy shit, his message, I relate to it as a human being, as a fellow leader and stuff like that. So those were all the goals with the TED Talk. I'd really prayed it would go viral.
It will.
Okay. Well, I feel like a lot in my life is that way. I don't have a lot that instantly explodes. The Trident was out over a year before it finally hit the New York Times bestsellers list. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know it hit the list. My agent never told me. I didn't find out till 5 years later it made the New York Times bestsellers list when we wrote Overcome, and they said, hey, we're going to write New York Times bestseller on the book. And I was like, no, that's not true. And they're like, yeah, it is. You made the list, you know, in 2014. Never knew. So once again, it comes back to you never know. We all have our ideas and expectations. I've done a lot of national media. I've done a lot of really big podcasts. Sometimes I hope that they are going to explode and they don't. Sometimes, you know, like the Sean Ryan show right now, it has exploded and I'm thankful for that. So I'll just tell people things happen when they're going to. If you believe in who you are, if you have that purpose and mission, man, just keep beating that drum and going after it, man, trying to be the best 100% version of yourself every day. That's me. I'd love to continue to get it out there, whether it's the TED Talk or whether it's some other format.
I think that it would be a disservice if you didn't do it, because it means a lot to a lot of people to show up. And brother, I've been looking forward to this. I'm blown away by how thoughtful this was. And it actually kind of went better than I thought, but at least the way that I wanted it to go. in the sense where I really want to reveal what your strengths are. And my goal is to provide value on this podcast where somebody listens to it and go, that's exactly what I need to fucking hear. And I knew you're the guy to deliver the message today on this. There's a lot of people in pain and you're a fucking pain management specialist without the OxyContin. So listen, man, I don't know how to thank you enough. You know, it means the world to me that you took a chance on a guy you had no fucking idea about, but we're going to do the right stuff with this. We have a big following as well, and hopefully we can keep that momentum going. And I know that your agent had asked about maybe having you. We're having a conference in 2023 in Nashville, Tennessee. So the last conference we had, just so you know, to give you a little context, we had. Are you friends with Dakota Meyer?
I do know Dakota. Yep. I wouldn't say we're friends. I'm very careful how I use that word. So I know Dakota. I have tremendous respect for Dakota. I've done some things with him. To me, a friend is someone I hang out with and I confide in as I talk and we do things together. And I've never done that with Dakota. So
last conference we had Dakota, Tommy Lahren from Fox News, Marcus Luttrell came, and Tim Kennedy came.
Nice. You had a powerhouse, man. Some heavy hitters.
This year we have
Tommy's not bad. You know, she's not bad looking either. So
no, she's not. Honestly, dude, you know, it's so funny because I think a lot of people get misinterpreted about me because I speak with emotion and passion, and people who know me. And
I thought you were going to say it's because how pretty you are. I mean, I thought we were going down that path, you know.
I have a routine. I'm just letting you know. I have a fucking routine, dude. I'm not too proud to say that shit. Charcoal wash. I will go get fucking
you and Tommy right here.
Yeah.
But although Marcus will poke fun at me saying I'm, for a guy that got shot in the face, I'm the most beautiful man. So
you're actually not a bad looking dude, bro. You know what I mean? Like to put you back together.
I got to give the surgeon props. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
No. But to give her credit, man, she is really one of the kindest people off camera. So much humility. She's so fucking good to us. Awesome. I think we're all come together for the right reasons. This year we have for 2023 so far, Rob O'Neill.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
Yeah. Kyle Carpenter.
Awesome. Another great dude.
Yeah. We have Tommy's coming back because it's in Nashville and she wants to come do it again. We have three significant sheriffs. You may be familiar with them. David Clark. He's the dude with the cowboy hat. You see him. He's coming. We have Wayne Ivey, who's a sheriff in Florida. And then the American sheriff out of Pinal County, Mark Lamb, another cool fucking dude. And we have, of course, some real profound speakers from our organization. And you know, hopefully we can make it work, man. I'm going to see if I can get you on the calendar there, because as we're sitting here, I'm like, God, he's got to be there. He's got to fucking be there, man.
So
I know that you're
able to make it work. I'd love it.
Cool, man. So listen, again, thank you so much for everything and anything we can do for you at any time. If you've come across our content and you thought something was cool, or you want to do this again, brother, we're yours. I know you're busy, but I just can't thank you enough from the bottom of my heart. Really, I really appreciate it.
Dennis, my honor, man. And yeah, man, to all you law enforcement out there, brother, I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. Don't buy into all this bullshit that's out there. The majority of Americans still appreciate you. That's for sure. And we need you, man. We need you. We need new, young law enforcement willing to step up. And you older guys, I know I'm speaking to a lot of departments who are bitter and you're like, I'm just going to ride my time. We need you to step up and lead. Now more than ever. So it's never too late.
Sir, thank you again.
Thank you. Navy SEAL leader, I've always chosen light and fast over slow and heavy. As such, I rarely wore my side plates into battle. But on this one mission, to neutralize a high-value al-Qaeda leader in 2007, I had a little voice in my head say, wear your side plates. Well, I tell you what, thank God that I listened, because that night we were ambushed. And I was shot 8 times by an enemy PKM machine gun to my body and face, leaving me for dead in the middle of one of the fiercest firefights of my war. A little over 96 hours later, I found myself in a hospital bed in Bethesda, Maryland, struggling as the doctors filled me with overwhelming information. Lieutenant Redmond,
You have no use of your left hand. We don't know the extent of the nerve damage. Your elbow is destroyed. We're thinking about amputating your arm. You are trached, you are wired shut, and we are feeding you through a stomach tube. Lieutenant Redmond, it's going to take years to put you back together. As this information began to sink in, I suddenly was hit with a stark realization. My military operational career is over. I'm going to be permanently disabled, and I will be forever disfigured. As I was trying to process this, I suddenly heard a conversation close by, and it sounded a little like this. What a shame. What a pity. We send these young men and women off to war, and they come home broken and battered, and they're never going to be the same. They're never going to find success. They're never going to be able to get back out there and achieve the American dream. And as I digested all of this, I couldn't help but think to myself, it is the end. And I know there's so many of you in the audience right now that are listening. You're thinking to yourself, oh my God, I cannot relate to this. I can't relate to be in the middle of a firefight and be shot by a machine gun with bullets the size of my thumb. I can't imagine laying in a hospital bed and being told we may have to amputate your limbs. But the reality is, you all can relate, because everyone has the end moments. Everyone in this audience has encountered a the end moment before. And if you have not, I got bad news. They are coming. They're coming for all of us. And you see, they are relatable. Like the father who came home to find out his young wife was having an affair. And as he signed the divorce papers looking at his young children, he thought to himself, it is the end. Or the entrepreneur who, sitting there going over his financials, looking at his million-dollar company is going down the drain, and he thinks to himself, it is the end. Or the business executive, she just made partner, and as she goes to her annual checkup, the doctor says, you've got stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. We need to do an immediate double mastectomy. She thinks to herself, it is the end. You see, all of us in life encounter these the end moments, these hard, stress-filled, anxiety-filled moments that unexpectedly hit us, no different from that ambush I encountered in Iraq. The difference is, these are life ambushes, and you are not being hit by actual bullets or bombs that occur on the battlefield. You are being hit by the bombs and bullets of life. And the thing is, that's common for all of us. When these ambushes occur, we all get stuck on a central point. In special operations lingo, we call it the X. And the X is that central point of attack. It is the point of incident. It's the point of the end moments. And for most of us, we focus on the pain, we focus on the misery, we focus on that stress, we focus on the past and what we've lost, instead of focusing on what really needs to happen, which is what I was taught in my special operations career. When these life ambushes come, we must get off the X as quickly as possible. So how do we do that? As I lay in that hospital bed digesting all these grim prognoses, the negativity, I realized in that moment, I had a choice. I had a choice in how I would deal with this. I could lay there on the X and feel sorry for myself. I could listen to the negativity, or I could figure out how to drive forward. And in that moment, I decided I would not be the victim that some wanted to put me into that box. Instead, I was going to step up. I was going to look at how to go forward. And when my wife came back into the room, I said, give me my pen. And I wrote out this sign. Attention to all who enter here. If you're coming in this room with sadness or sorrow, don't bother. The wounds I received, I got in a job that I love, doing it for people that I love, defending the freedom of a country I deeply love. I'll make a full recovery. What is full? That is the absolute utmost physically I have the ability to recover. And then I'm going to push that about 100% further through sheer mental tenacity. This room you're about to enter is a room of fun, optimism, and intense rapid regrowth. If you are not prepared for that, go elsewhere. And we signed it. We signed it, the management. You know, because we felt like, you know, it needed this level of credibility or something. It is amazing the power of positivity over negativity. It is amazing what in the face of massive adversity, when we choose to drive forward, what it can do for us. Because most people are unwilling to do this. We're so focused on the pain and the misery and on what we lost, we focus on the end. And we get stuck on the X. Failing to realize one of the greatest gifts you have when life ambushes come, that it can become a new beginning. Some of the hardest moments in your life will become some of the greatest opportunities. You will be reborn like a phoenix from the ashes. And as I wrote that sign out and we hung it, I thought to myself, okay, you've set the benchmark. You've said where you're going to go. How do we go? And it comes down to two key principles I had learned in my special operations career. The first one is you have to be willing to overcome. You have to build this relentless overcome mindset. Because you see, life ambushes are coming for all of us. Life is unfair. It doesn't go according to plan. But if you already have it in your mind that no matter what obstacles or adversity I come up against, I'm going to overcome, you're already well on your way. And number two, when we get on the X, we've got to think about how we move quickly off of it. And I had learned the same thing that my teammates and I managed to do that night to come home from my Iraq. I learned to get off the X, you have to react. And you see, REACT is an acronym for what we do with massively hard situations, these life ambushes, these the end moments. And the first step is you've got to recognize your reality. And you see, this is really one of the hardest things, because when life ambushes come, when the end moments come, for many of us, the very first step is we're in denial. We don't want to admit it. We want to push it away, like an ostrich sticking our heads in the sand. We just hope and pray it'll go away on its own. Yeah, I got bad news. That doesn't work. Like when I was laying there in that firefight, at one point I was thinking to myself, I'd really like to call a timeout right now. Life does not work this way. And I've got to tell you, you will never get off the X until you come to grips with the reality, until you acknowledge and articulate there is a problem. Houston, we've got a problem. And it's at this point that you are starting the process to move forward. Number two, now that we know it, we've got to evaluate our assets. We've got to take an inventory of all the things we need to get out of this crisis. As I lay there, pinned down by enemy fire, in my mind, I started to think about, this is a bad situation, how do we get out of it? Well, I've got my teammates. I've got a Marine Corps quick reaction force. I've got an Army medevac helicopter crew. I've got drones. I've got an Air Force AC-130 gunship. These were all the assets we had to utilize to bring this problem. No different than we all have in life. You see, when these hard moments come, we need to think about, I have my family. I have my friends. I have some money in an account, or maybe I need to borrow some money to deal with a problem. Maybe I need an accountant. Maybe I need an attorney. Maybe I need a priest, counselor, chaplain. It doesn't matter. All that matters is we evaluate these assets and take stock of our inventory. The next one, we've got to assess the possible options and outcomes. And when we look at this, oftentimes when people make it to this step, there's this sudden sense of urgency, like, oh my God, I'm in a crisis and I need to move right now. And so often we tend to put ourselves in a worse situation because we did not think through the steps. So this is where it's critical to take inventory, to look at our options, and look at the outcome. And one of the hardest parts of this step is oftentimes when we're in a crisis, there is no good option and outcome. It is choosing the best of the bad decisions. And so often, so many of us don't want to do what needs to be done, which is the short-term pain for the long-term gain. It took me 12 years to get to where I am now. And I followed this process. Number four, you've got to choose a direction and communicate. And this is absolutely critical, because one of the things is when you have a life ambush and you're on the X, you are never on the X alone. Your family gets pulled onto the X with you. Your kids get pulled onto the X with you. Your spouse is on the X with you. If it is a business ambush, your employees, your colleagues, your partners, they're all on the X with you. And guess what? In that misery, agonizing, stress-filled, the end moment, they feel it too. And this is where you have to step up and provide something that is one of the quintessential pieces of the overcome mindset. When you say, this is where we're going, and this is how we're going to do it, you give people hope. Hope is a powerful ally. And the last one, most important, you have to take action. You have to execute. I've watched so many businesses, individuals that have gone through trauma that go through this process and they get into this infinite loop where they continue to go back and forth through this process without ever taking action because they are waiting for the perfect moment. They're waiting for the lull in gunfire. They're waiting for their next paycheck. They're waiting to close this deal because it's going to be the tipping point to allow us to get out of this crisis. I hate to tell you, the perfect moment will never come. The time to move is now. The time to get off the X is now. And here's an interesting fact. Out of all the thousands of wounded warriors I've worked with, individuals that have been through trauma, companies that have suffered through failure, crisis, massive change, the ones who got off the X the fastest didn't just survive, they thrived. They launched from their ambush, and they were able to drive out of it faster because there's an interesting fact about the X. The longer you sit on the X, it's like quicksand. It gets harder and harder to get up and move. This is why this process is so critical. Life ambushes are out there. The reality is, right now, for all of you out there, you were either in a life ambush, you're coming out of a life ambush, or somewhere out there on the horizon, one is waiting for you. But here's the good news. You have a choice. You have a choice in how you're going to deal with it. That day in that hospital, I chose to drive forward. I chose to overcome. I chose to not be limited by what the doctors said my prognosis would be. I chose to ignore the negativity around me. I chose to figure out not how I would be the past version of who I was, because the reality is that's never going to happen. Instead, you have to figure out how to become the best version of your new you, your new 100%. And I created something called the Pentagon of Peak Performance. And I looked at, and over the last 12 years, I focused physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, and spiritually. And it brought me to this spot right here. So the good news is, when these life ambushes come for you, you have a choice. Choose to be positive. Choose to put your own sign on the door. And choose to get off the X and overcome. Thank you.
If you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.